This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. Boy, a lot going on. Last night, John McCain, frankly, not just winning the primary down in Florida, but frankly, the biggest story, the biggest part of that story in my mind was the fact that Mitt Romney outspent him, that Willard Romney outspent him 5-1. And John McCain still beat him, which is a testimonial to what a powerful candidate John McCain is in the Republican Party. Keep in mind, this was a closed primary, and the potential danger he represents to a Democratic candidate, which brings us to the Democratic race. The news story is that within the hour, John Edwards will be announcing that he's leaving the race, that he's leaving the campaign race. And it's interesting. Some of the email and some of the things I've been hearing from people and my own feelings about this as well. Michael, for example, sends a note. He says, my day has been ruined by the announcement that John Edwards is leaving the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. I truly feel that of the three leading candidates, he was the one who best represented the ideals of true progressives. I'm inclined to agree. I'm not inclined. I've been on the air publicly on a regular basis agreeing with you, Michael. He says, I will support whomever ultimately receives a Democratic nomination, but first I need some time to mourn the loss of the best candidate we had. A lot of speculation about what's going to happen and where it's going to go. There were a couple of comments that I thought were particularly poignant. One of them, Claudius the God over on the Daily Kos, he writes a piece called A Salute to Edwards. And saying, he says, I suspect Edwards withdrew because he realized how much damage a brokered convention might do to the Democrats. He says, I'm supporting Obama and think his chances are marginally better, actually, if Edwards had stayed in. For the Democrats to have the strongest chance of winning in November, though, they need a nominee who can say that he or she received a majority of the votes cast in the primaries. Edwards, I think, understood that. We've reached the point where the supporters of the two other candidates would not accept a result which was based upon horse trading or shenanigans. Therefore, this is an act of true statesmanship. Edwards supporters can feel very proud of him today. So do I. And I tip my hat to you, Claudius the God, for saying what I was thinking, but you said it in a very, very clear and articulate way. We have Super Tuesday coming up next week, these primary states. And oddly enough, I mean, this is Jerome Corsi writing for WorldNet Daily. Jerry Corsi has been a guest on this program many times. He's the guy behind the Swift Votes for Veterans, Swift Vote Veterans for Truth smear on John Kerry. And I'm not holding him up as any kind of political genius or anything, although you could argue that he took down a Democratic nominee. But anyhow, he points out that the 24 states holding primaries next week's Super Tuesday have lost a total of 1,568,600 manufacturing jobs in the 7 years since Bush took office, according to the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And he quotes Carrie Houston, apparently a WorldNet Daily interview. She's a senior analyst at AAM, saying Republicans who have opposed unions for decades don't want to talk about outsourcing as a problem because they're afraid the unions would come back if the jobs came back. And the Republicans are happy to see Democrats denied campaign contributions that would be coming out of union dues. And interesting analysis and true. I mean, the Mitt Romney wing of the Republican Party, the corporatist wing of the Republican Party, Mitt Romney basically, you know, made his money, his hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, running a pump and dump operation, you know, buying up companies, stripping employees out of them, changing the organization of the company. I've seen this. We've all seen this. And then, you know, walking away with hundreds of millions of dollars, the guys at the very top, and you know, busting the unions and in many cases outsourcing the jobs. So The Mitt Romney branch of the Republican Party, very, very concerned, very happy, frankly, about all this outsourcing, and very concerned about the possibility of manufacturing coming back. So there's a whole bunch of different things here that are going on. I don't have the breakout. In fact, I've been looking for it, but I'm unable to find it. But the breakout of how many states are winner-take-all. For example, Florida last night was a winner-take-all primary, at least on the Republican side. And I'm not sure on the Democratic side. But the more of the Republican primaries around the United States are winner-take-all, more of the Democratic primaries are proportional representation around the country. And so the math on this thing is just getting so complex, it's almost impossible to hold in your head, much less even graph it. But the bottom line is that it's now a race for the delegates. Is it going to be, what's the impact for the Democrats? What's the impact of John Edwards pulling out? And there, you know, there's a variety of different thoughts on that. And that it may, assuming that he doesn't make an endorsement before Super Tuesday, and I suspect that's a safe assumption. We'll see. But I suspect that he will have more power and more ability to influence things if he doesn't make an endorsement between now and then. Although, you know, as I said, time will tell. But what's the effect of his pulling out? Are the Edwards voters going to end up going to Obama, or are they going to go to Hillary Clinton? Are they going to say, okay, Barack Obama seems to be maybe the more progressive guy, he seems to talk a more progressive line, or are they going to say, you know, Barack Obama, not so progressive, you know, he's been talking about Social Security melting down or whatever. I mean, you know, Barack Obama, to a large extent, has been a national Rorschach test because he hasn't been on the national stage for a decade or two decades like Hillary Clinton has. And so instead of knowing everything about him, people are projecting a lot of what they want onto him or what they fear onto him. And so he's got to get out there and start talking about not just vision for the future, but specific issues. I know he has been, but it's going to get a whole lot more specific very, very quickly and defining himself. Or are the John Edwards voters going to go to Hillary Clinton with some sort of calculus saying, okay, A, she's got, you know, a 90% progressive voting record. I believe it was ADA that pulled that together, Americans for Democratic Action. There are a number of different, you know, rankings, but in most of the rankings, she's very progressive in her votes, or has been by and large. So she's an acceptable candidate, and maybe even a very good candidate. And B, she's more likely to be able to win, to beat John McCain than Barack Obama, or, you know, the people will say Barack Obama is more likely to be able to win, to beat John McCain. He's going to bring out the young people. He's going to bring out, he's talking about hope. This is an election about change. And so much of this stuff right now, at this point in time, is so fluid that I think we would all be making a huge mistake if we said, okay, this is the way it's going to be. And particularly, I hope to see an end to the circular firing squad of Democrats and progressives and people who call themselves progressives basically shooting at these candidates and attacking these candidates in ways that, when it comes time for the general election, are going to leave them wounded. It's frankly, in my opinion, just not a good thing. Not a good thing. There's a couple other things that are in the news that I want to talk about very briefly, and then I'd love to take your calls and get your thoughts as well on in particular John Edwards dropping out, but also, you know, the probability now, the virtual certainty, I would say, that the Republican nominee is going to be John McCain. Again, as I said, I think the big story, Mitt Romney outspent him 7-1 out west. He outspent him 5-1 down in Florida. In both cases, he lost. And that, by the way, is not reported on the television, by and large. You don't see the TV pundits talking about this. Why? Because they're getting Mitt Romney's money, and they want to keep getting Mitt Romney's money. But that, in my mind, is the big story, that the guy can't successfully buy the election. You know, outspending 5-1 and still losing, that says something about the candidates. And also what's going on. But the other thing that I wanted to point out is that as to quote David Swanson, he wrote a brilliant op-ed, and this has been reported in a number of places, but David Swanson's headline, the State of the Union Address came with a signing statement. Do you know that George W. Bush issued a signing statement on the day that he did his State of the Union Address? announcing in advance his intention to break the law in four different ways, four key sections of a major piece of legislation that he signed into law, the defense authorization bill specifically. And he just laid it right out. I'll share the details of that with you right after the break, and then we'll pick up your phone calls at 866-303-2270. You can also drop into our live chat room if you'd like, tomhartman.com. Click chat. It'll get you there. I believe there's also a link there from airamerica.com. If you go to the Tom Hartman page, you'll find a blog both there and also over at tomhartman.com if you want to participate in that as well. So stick around. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bob Casey on the floor of the Senate, the senator, the Democratic senator from Pennsylvania yesterday, blasting Bush for his signing statement, talking, you know, explicitly about this.
Authorization bill into law, the president declared his right to ignore several important provisions, including the establishment of an important special commission to review wartime contracting.
Oh, interesting. So Bush says that the Congress passes a law saying that we've got to review his Republican cronies, the wartime contractors, and he says, I am hereby declaring that as King of the United States, I can ignore this law and I will not put into place such a commission. Bob Casey continues.
This provision was an initiative of the Senate Democratic freshman class led by Senators Webb and McCaskill. The president also declared his right to ignore a provision prohibiting funding for U.S. military bases or installations in Iraq that facilitate, quote, permanent stationing, unquote.
In other words, Congress says we are not going to have permanent bases in Iraq, and Bush says, oh, I can ignore that, too. It doesn't matter what the people say. It doesn't matter what Congress says. It doesn't matter that the first article of the Constitution is about the creation of Congress. I'm the president. I'm the king. This really is the boy king. I mean, Bob Casey continues.
Of U.S. troops in Iraq. Let me say that again in plain language. This provision sought to prevent the United States from establishing permanent bases in Iraq, and the president has indicated he may ignore this provision. Every time senior administration officials are asked about permanent military bases in Iraq, they contend it is not their intention to construct such facilities.
Yeah, this is something that the Bush administration has been saying all along. Oh, yeah, we're building all these bases, but they're not permanent bases. But as Bob Casey says, Bush now, in the signing statement, has put into writing, essentially, that these are permanent bases. Here's Bob Casey.
Yet, this signing statement issued by the president yesterday is the clearest signal yet that the administration wants to hold this option in reserve. Mr. President, this is exactly the wrong signal to send both to the Iraqi government and its neighbors in the region, and to others as well. Permanent U.S. military bases gives a blank check to an Iraqi government that has shown no evidence it is ready to step up and take full responsibility for what happens in Iraq. Permanent U.S. military bases feeds the propaganda of our enemies, who argue that the United States invasion in 2003 was carried out to secure access to Iraq's oil and establish a strategic beachhead for the U.S. military in the region.
Thank you, Bob Casey. Well said. In addition to saying that he has the right not to probe fraud by Halliburton, that he can prevent Congress, Congress says, okay, you know, Congress makes the laws. Congress doesn't do the implementation of the laws. So Congress says there will be an Environmental Protection Agency. It becomes the job of the president to execute the laws, the executive branch. And so the Environmental Protection Agency, for example, is set up under the executive branch. Congress says there will be a commission that investigates whether or not Halliburton, KBR, all these other companies are engaged in fraud. And it becomes the job of the president, the executive branch, to execute that law, to do it, to put it into place, to make it happen. And Bush says, nope, I'm going to ignore that. He also gave himself the power not to protect whistleblowers. Defense appropriation bill said whistleblowers shall be protected. Bush, in his signing statement, says, no, I'm going to ignore that. If somebody wants to blow the whistle on fraud and corruption inside our government, inside our administration, we will punish them. We will destroy them. We're going to ignore the law. He gave himself the right not to provide Congress with documents. This, in my opinion, is the strongest argument for impeachment hearings, for John Conyers' Judiciary Committee in the House to immediately begin impeachment hearings against both Bush and Cheney, simply so that they can subpoena these documents. Because in the Supreme Court case, when Richard Nixon said that because he was president, he could use executive privilege, a concept, by the way, that was developed by the Supreme Court just about 100 years ago, so that the president, you know, the concept was that the president could have secret consultation, particularly about international issues and things like that, you know, with people, and they wouldn't have to be made public. But in the U.S. versus Nixon that came out of Watergate, when Richard Nixon said, no, I'm not going to turn over the White House tapes to Congress in the impeachment hearings because I don't have to. I'm asserting executive privilege, which is what Bush is doing case after case after case. The Supreme Court ruled that in case of impeachment, in case of a crime, if we're talking about a crime being committed, he cannot assert executive privilege. He has to comply with the subpoenas. And that, if nothing else, is the strongest argument, frankly, I think, for this. So, a lot going on here. George Bush asserting that he is going to break the law in four different areas, just coming right out and saying it, that he's going to break the law. And not a peep out of anybody, other than, you know, Bob Casey going off about, you know, about the permanent bases, but not saying, and therefore, Mr. Bush, we're going to take you on. Not a peep out of Congress. It wasn't reported in the mainstream media, the national corporate media. So a lot on our plate here. And then the most recent Rasmussen poll, this is interesting, Drudge is reporting, but it's the Rasmussen poll, is that McCain beats Clinton 48-40 and Obama 47-41. Ouch.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back, my friends, to listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our local affiliates and their advertisers. And our national advertisers as well. For example, the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199 fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Philip, in one of our newest affiliates, Missoula, Montana, listening on KMPT. Hey, Philip, what's up?
Hi, how are you today?
I'm just great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Hey, listen, first of all, I just wanted to say we lost you about a year ago here. We had a station, progressive radio station in Missoula. We lost it in the last year. It's been really difficult for all of us. And you're back on air just since, I guess, a few days ago, and I'm very, very excited about that.
Yeah, so are we. We're very pleased to be back on the air in Missoula. It's great. It's great. And I'm seeing this, you know, across the country. We're back on the air in Columbus, Ohio as well, and there's a couple of other cities that look like they're coming on. Progressive Talk Radio, what's happening is the radio industry is realizing this is as much mainstream talk radio as conservative talk radio is. I mean, there's a market for it. So anyhow, to the issue that you called about.
Yes, a couple things. First of all, I wanted to ask you very briefly if you can mention something about the superdelegates and how they're allocated. I don't know much about that, and I've been hearing about it. Don't really understand the process. Maybe you can enlighten us on that.
Very quickly, the superdelegates are people who are elected members of the Democratic Party. If you're a member of the United States Senate, a member of the House of Representatives, a governor, you're elected, and you're a Democrat, then you are a superdelegate. You get to be a delegate automatically. Many of the superdelegates have endorsed people. For example, Ted Kennedy is obviously a superdelegate. You know, yesterday or the day before, he came out and endorsed Barack Obama. However, That doesn't mean that he has to vote for Barack Obama. The superdelegate votes are not, even if they pledge them, even if they say, you know, no matter what they say at the, you know, when it comes to the convention, they can vote any way they want.
Hmm.
And
there's
well, about 900 of them altogether. Also, the head of the party is a superdelegate. You know, there's a whole bunch of them.
Right. Now, here's something I wanted to share with your audience and maybe chat with you a little bit about. I'm actually an independent. I haven't voted Democratic in a while. I would never, almost never, I can't really conceive myself ever voting for a Republican. However, I always look for a candidate that I can feel very good about, that I can say to myself, okay, I'm voting for this person because I believe that this is somebody who could represent me.
Philip, I think you've made the proclamation of probably most Americans. Most Americans would say, you know, something very similar to that.
Right, right. And I've been in a position in recent years where I found myself voting for third-party candidates because I just couldn't bring myself to vote for Democratic candidates for one reason or another. Now, this time around, I'm quite excited. I think the field is very strong, and I just wanted to say that if Obama or Edwards, of course, Edwards, it sounds like, is backing out at this point. But if one of those two candidates were to be chosen as a Democratic candidate, I would be very excited and happy to vote for those candidates. However, I would find myself very, very torn. I don't think I would be able to vote for Hillary Clinton, and I'll tell you why. It's because she represents to me somebody who has been in the establishment for quite some time. At one of the debates, I recall her saying, well, I've been here for 35 years, and I've been working for change for 35 years. Well, I find that really hard to buy because, yes, she's been around the political scene for all that time.
Yeah. Philip, here's what you're missing. Here's what you're missing. Mm-hmm. And that is that Hillary Clinton is essentially, as anybody who runs for president is, frankly, at the bottom line, is essentially a political animal. And what that means is that she is going to have to respond to we the people if we get out there and are active. This is the problem that we had when, frankly, in my opinion, when Bill Clinton was first elected on a very progressive platform, and I believe in his heart, he, you know, starting out before he became president, he was a very progressive guy. And there's an amazing documentary that was made by the BBC where they interview Robert Rubin, and he talks about how 2 weeks before the inauguration, after Clinton was elected, Alan Greenspan and I believe it was Robert Rubin sat him down and said, "Here's the facts of life, Charlie. You are not going to govern as the progressive that you campaigned as. You're going to have to govern as basically a conservative Republican." And he did, and he declared the era of big government over. And we the people, you know, it seemed like things were going good and things were going well, and there was fiscal responsibility was coming back, and so we all kind of went to sleep and went off and made some money and. You know, that was, you know, and people just kind of checked out of politics. I don't think that's where we're at now. In fact, I can tell you for sure that's not where we're at now. People are checking into politics in droves. And Hillary Clinton, frankly, I mean, look back over the history of this. And Philip, thank you very much for the call and for raising these issues. But if you look at the history of this, Franklin Roosevelt ran on an absolute Casper Milk Toast ticket. Or candidacy. I mean, you know, the major thing that he was going to do was going to recalibrate Smoot-Hawley, you know, a tariff act that had been passed by the Republicans in 1930, 2 years earlier. He was going to slightly reduce it. Like, that's going to be some kind of big deal, right? But when he got into office, he felt the pressure of the people at his back. And he became a tremendous force for change. The same, I believe, is true of Teddy Roosevelt, who was the vice president of McKinley. Who's, I think it's McKinley's birthday today. I may be wrong on that, but in any case, Teddy Roosevelt was McKinley's vice president. McKinley was openly, you know, the rich white guy candidate who was running on behalf of the corporations in the late 1890s. And Teddy Roosevelt was right there with him. And when McKinley was assassinated in 1901 and Roosevelt became president, the progressive movement in the United States was really hitting a crest. And he jumped on that. He saw it. He said, this is the way things are going. And frankly, I'm seeing Hillary Clinton moving in a more and more progressive direction all the time. All the Democratic candidates have been. I saw this in 2000. I saw John Kerry going from you know, becoming more and more of a progressive. Certainly Howard Dean did. I mean, I saw that up close and personal. I don't know Howard Dean like a friend, but, you know, certainly he was my governor when I lived in Vermont for about 10 years. And you know, people in Vermont, we were all going, you know, is this the Howard Dean we know? He was a Republican light. As governor of Vermont. And all of a sudden he becomes a progressive. Why? Because he got out there on the campaign trail. He got out there and talked to Americans. He had to engage in debates with people like Dennis Kucinich who were bringing up these issues. He got it. He figured it out. And I think that Howard Dean actually became a progressive as a consequence of that. And I believe that if enough of us are active, even if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, and frankly, I suspect that she probably will be, but, you know, I don't want to, you know, handicap this race or change it, frankly. I want the voters, I want we the people to be speaking on this. But even if she is the nominee, I think that there's a very real possibility, and she becomes president of the United States, that she could be a very, very effective voice for positive and progressive change. So we'll see. Arlene in California. Hey, Arlene, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is my first time ever calling in, and I listen to you as often as I can.
Well, thank you.
But right now I was on my way back home from school. I started school because I'm one of the middle class people that have lost my job. And, you know, it's anyways. Yeah. And I heard you talking about John Edwards possibly dropping out of the race.
He's going to be making the announcement in about 20 minutes, I believe.
And if he does, and he probably will be, I'm so disheartened and very unhappy right now because he was my hope. I think he was the hope for the majority of the Americans out here that don't have a voice. And if you asked, you know, who would Edwards supporters vote for? The only way I would ever vote for Obama is if Edwards is on the ticket, because I do not trust that guy at all.
Well, you don't know him. I mean, this is where Barack Obama, the biggest challenge that he has right now is defining himself for people, because he's only held national elective office for a couple of years, and he spent about half that time campaigning for president. So he needs to be out there saying, this is who I am, this is what I did. We need to learn more about his record when he was a senator in Illinois, what he did. You know, Hillary Clinton tried to define him with the present vote thing. But it turns out that the Illinois Senate system is kind of weird and arcane, and present actually means something. I'm not, you know, Arlene, let's not write people off quite that quickly or quite that easily. Let's, if I may respectfully say, I think that we need to learn more about both of these candidates.
Well, yeah. I mean, but when it comes to Barack Obama, I loved the guy. When I first ever heard him talk, I thought he was awesome, you know. But the more I hear him talk, the more it scares me. I get scared.
Why?
When I hear that guy talk.
Why?
Because,
he's talking about hope. He's talking about positive change in America.
Yeah, that's. But I don't find it. There's no substance. There's no, like, how am I going to do this? How are we going to do this?
There are a lot of specifics over on his website. Arlene, I've got to move along, but there are a lot of specifics over on his website, and hopefully he will start talking about more of them. Johnny in Washington. Johnny, got to take a break in just a few seconds here. Is this a quickie?
Just a real quickie, thankfully. And your last caller sort of touched on it. What do you think are the chances of Edwards being on the ticket with Obama? You know, he would add the substance that Obama lacks.
Right.
And
or Hillary Clinton, for that matter, actually. You know,
yeah, I didn't originally see him with her, but being that she has taken a little bit more progressive stance, I would be definitely open to it. Either one.
I would love to see him on either one of those tickets. My sense of it is that he probably is not interested in running for vice president again. But he's a young guy, and running for vice president might be the right thing. I just don't know. I don't know. So we'll have to just wait.
He could be our heir apparent.
There you go. Yeah, it would be great. Johnny, thanks a lot for the call. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, we'll see. John Edwards is going to be speaking shortly. And we'll hear what he has to say. See what he has to say. Feel what he has to say. It is a change. This is a very significant change in the Democratic race and how it's going to shake out and where people are going to go as a consequence of it and why he's doing it. It's going to be very interesting to hear. And, you know, hopefully it has nothing to do with Elizabeth Edwards' health turning for the worse. I mean, that's the thing. She has been in my prayers, and I know many, many people around this country. But I just, no matter what it is, no matter what's going on, I guarantee you, John Edwards is not going to be, he's not going to go away forever. And I think, frankly, he'd make a great attorney general. I'd almost rather see him attorney general than vice president, because as an attorney general, he could start prosecuting some of the malfeasance and the crimes that we've been witnessing over the last 30 years or so. And I think it would be a great thing. Joe in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm a Obama supporter. I'll tell you, there's a couple of things that are really kind of sticking my craw with the Clintons. The whole Mark Rich situation and Mark Rich's connection to Scooter Libby. And I just think the Clintons...
Yeah, but that was like 20 years ago. I mean, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I think...
And that was Bill Clinton. That wasn't Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but I think it speaks to something bigger, which is the kind of friends that the Clintons have made over the years and the favors that they owe. And
I'm telling you, it's, you know, and the Clintons would say, well, what about Barack Obama and that, you know, corrupt developer guy, you know, Redzo or whatever his name was, although apparently his relationship wasn't anywhere near as close as the Clintons with the riches. But the bottom line is that you don't get to be president of the United States and have your hands clean completely. It just doesn't happen.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the longer that you're there, the worse that it is, as obviously, what, you know, taken to world records with the Bush administration. But I think, you know, bringing the Clintons back into the White House again can just, like, rekindle all those old relationships. And it's troubling to me. The other thing, you know, and why I think McCain will be really, really formidable force is because the neocons hate him so much. And the fact that they hate him so much makes him appealing to people like me, quite frankly.
Right.
I mean,
plus,
the fact they hate him.
Yeah, you know, plus he's going to have a large chunk of the Hispanic vote. I mean, he was the co-author of the legislation for immigration reform. Issue that he's just basically going to take away from the Democrats. And, you know, he's going to have, I mean, there are large constituencies out there, a large chunk of the independent vote who's just always thought of him as the straight shooting guy, the straight talking guy. I mean, John McCain, and frankly, I think he's still going to bring along the fundamentalists because he has always been in favor of putting women who get abortions in jail or putting their doctors in jail or whatever. You know, he's always been anti-abortion. And so he's going to bring along, you know, they're going to hold their nose on some issues, but he's going to be a tough one to beat. But Joe, thanks a lot for your call. I appreciate it. It's Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Kenny, what are your thoughts?
I'm disagreeing with all these people keep talking about Barack. I don't have no substance. I listen to you every day for how long, always talking about how we need to stay involved. And people don't listen to what Barack said. Barack said change don't come unless we elect the president but stay a part of the process.
Yep. This is what I like so much about Barack Obama is that he uses the word we far more than he uses the word me. I think that that's a marvelous thing, that he's the guy who's talking about it's all about we the people. It's all about you folks, you know, his audience, talking to his audience, about you folks getting involved in the process. He's the one who's trying to bring people into the system and into the process. And I think that that's absolutely his greatest strength.
That's the only way you're going to get change is if you stay part of the process. The president can't write laws, you know.
That's right. Yeah, well, tell that to George Bush. but yeah, no, your point is well taken, Kenny, and I absolutely agree with it. And I think, you know, we're down to two candidates now, apparently. We'll know within probably 5 or 10 minutes, but the reports have been, for all practical purposes, confirmed. And frankly, I think these are both good, strong candidates, and they're both going to have a real challenge taking on John Edwards. Stuart in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Stuart, what's on your mind today?
John Edwards for Attorney General.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was my point. I mean, you want somebody who's going to do what Teddy Roosevelt did in 1907, you know, the trust buster. If he can't do it as president, he certainly could do it as attorney general. And like the way that Bobby Kennedy went after the mafia, John Edwards would go after the new mafia, which is the corporate mafia. I think it would be a great thing. Thanks a lot, Stuart. I appreciate it. John in Riverside, California. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I'm one of those people that was originally for Kucinich. When Kucinich dropped out, I said, okay, Edwards. And now it's like, you know, now I got to go to Obama. And the reason I say that is the Clintons, I was in the union during the time when Bill Clinton signed NAFTA, lost my job. And my family and I really struggled while Bill Clinton was in office.
Yeah.
I see Hillary doing exactly what Bill did, lying. I see her lying so she can get the nomination. And I'm afraid she's going to do exactly what he did. And if people really want change, Edwards or Kucinich was the change. Those are the people that would have gone after the corporatists that are taking over our country. And I don't think Hillary's going to be any better. Just the abortion issue is not enough for me. Well, I'm worried about the corporatists.
Yeah,
I don't have abortions.
Yeah, it's not just going to be abortion. It's going to be, I mean, the next president is going to, in all probability, appoint at least one, probably two, and maybe three members of the Supreme Court. You got John Paul Stevens is 86 years old. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has had cancer.
Keep in mind, she took money from Rupert Murdoch. So she's a corporatist herself, and I think she's going to appoint the same kind of people.
Well, we'll see. We'll just have to see. Any Democrat, including Hillary Clinton, in my mind, is better than any Republican, including John McCain. We'll just have to see how it shakes out. Which direction she's going to be moving, which direction Barack Obama's going to be moving. It's John Edwards dropping out of this race is going to introduce a whole new dynamic into it that is going to be fascinating to watch, particularly as we move into the debates here tonight and tomorrow night on CNN, sponsored by the coal lobby of all things. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. John Edwards will be speaking shortly about his withdrawing from the race. And hopefully we'll be able to grab some of that audio and that feed and share it with you. There are other things in the news as well, by the way, that are going on. The economically, today's Financial Times was just absolutely startling. The first two pages, page one and page two. Page one, the screaming lead headline, the one with the, you know, the type that's 3/4 of an inch tall, Corporate America Braced for Recession. This is the Financial Times of London. Leading U.S. companies are shifting into recession mode and preparing to cut costs, freeze hiring, and reduce capital spending as they brace for an economic slowdown, according to senior executives and industry experts. Their concerns are likely to be reinforced by the International Monetary Fund, which yesterday slashed its forecast for U.S. growth and warned that no country would be immune from what it termed a global slowdown. A new U.S. study out today also shows the U.S. chief financial officer's views of the economy are the most pessimistic in nearly 4 years. Now, let's also note that today, Ben Bernanke, in all probability, will be announcing another rate cut from the Fed. We'll see. But then you turn to page two of the Financial Times and look at the headlines. This is incredible. The EU, this European leaders meeting in London, European leaders meeting in London were warned yesterday not to succumb to the temptations of protectionism or the irresponsible pump priming of their economies. This is the EU Commission president, the European Commission president. He's basically the guy who's the president of all of Europe, the European Commission, José Manuel Barroso. He says he warned against knee-jerk reactions to the global downturn, urging action that was both targeted and proportionate. Here's another headline, again, page two. U.S. growth forecast cut as global slowdown looms. This is an article about the IMF report. Here's another one. Bleak snapshot shows 7.7% fall in U.S. housing prices. This is the Case-Shiller Index. 20 large cities falling 7.7% in the year November 2007. This is over the course of the last year. This is a major problem for the United States. I mean, let's keep in mind that during the just since George Bush has become president, and you know, fortunately, 355 days until he's 355 days, 10 hours, 43 minutes, 47 seconds until he leaves, assuming that he is not impeached in the meantime. In the 7 years that he's been president, over 5 million people have slipped into poverty. Nearly 7 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Average median in household income has gone down by nearly $1,300 per family. 3 million American manufacturing jobs have been lost. 3 million American workers have lost their pensions. Home foreclosures are now the highest in record. In fact, they're now at the point where it's about 1% of all Americans. One out of every 100 Americans is involved in some stage of foreclosure proceedings right now. The personal savings rate has gone below zero, which the last time that happened was the Great Depression. Real earnings of college graduates have gone down by 5% just in the last 3 years. Entry-level wages for male and female high school graduates fallen over 3%. Wages and salaries are now at the lowest as a share of GDP since 1929. This is not what you would call economic progress. The economy, this from the Associated Press, the headline, "The economy nearly stalled in the fourth quarter," pointing out that the rate of job growth in the fourth quarter of 2007 was just 0.6%. For the entire year of 2007, the growth was only 2.2%. I mean, that's pathetic. You know, Clinton was, you know, pumping along 3+% like that. So, Greg Palast lays out this just brilliant piece. He says, you know, let's just look at the numbers. Let's just, you know, get to what this is really all about. And he says, in a State of the Union address, the president asked Congress for $300 million for poor kids in the inner city. $300 million. Okay, so we have 15 million children living in poverty. How much is that per child? $20. Yep, in his State of the Union address, George W. Bush asked for $20 per poverty-stricken child. Like, that's like some big deal. Let's give each one of them $20 for the year. Now, he also wanted to extend his tax cuts. That's $4.3 trillion over 10 years. The major recipients are millionaires. The number of millionaires happens, not coincidentally, as Greg Palast points out in his One Bush Left Behind column. You can find over at gregpalast.com, to equal the number of poor kids. There's roughly 15 million millionaires, roughly 15 million poor children. So $300 million to the poor kids, that's $20 per poor kid. $4.3 trillion to the millionaires, that's $287,000 per millionaire. This is what George Bush called for in his State of the Union address. And we have to have Greg Palast tell us this. I mean, you know, not to put down Greg. Greg's a great guy. But why wasn't CBS, NBC, CNN, ABC, MSNBC pointing this out? Doesn't anybody know how to do math anymore? It's mind-boggling. Economists, USA Today headline, economists rate chance of recession as a coin flip. I mean, the bottom line is, yes, there's going to be a recession, and it's not going to be the kind of recession that you have that's just in a normal part of the business cycle, or this kind of. It is the consequence of the hollowing out of the American economy. We have seen the American economy steadily, consistently, methodically destroyed during the last 26 years, ever since Ronald Reagan started deconstructing the New Deal. Remember Mr. Limbaugh?
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Those policies being, let's see, unemployment insurance, 5-day work week, the right to unionize, Social Security, a minimum wage, rural electrification, I mean, rural telephone service, national road system. The national park was put into place by his distant cousin Teddy, but he really amped them up. Yeah, we're doing something about that. We're going to give tax cuts, $284,000 each to the 15 million millionaires in the United States, $20 each to the 15 million poor children in the United States, and we're going to call that progress. No. We have outsourced our jobs. We have destroyed the economy of this country over the last 27 years. 27 years of Reaganomics are destroying the United States. And the rest of the world is standing around looking at us going, whoa, can't believe you did that. I mean, this is somewhere between absurd and obscene what has happened here in the United States over these last 27 years. And you can track it all back to Frederick von Hayek and Milton Friedman and the Chicago School of Economics if you want to get real technical about it. Or you can track it all the way back to the Victorian Age, to the Gilded Age, or both. I mean, to the whole idea of Darwinian economics. Oh, after all, only the fittest survive. Actually, survival of the fittest is a phrase that exists in The Origin of Species, Charles Darwin's book, only once or twice, as I recall. I actually did an analysis of that, and my friend David Loy has written about this extensively, about how what Darwin was pointing out was that it's not about the survival of the fittest, it's the survival of that species, those species that are most fit to interact with the rest of the environment around them. In other words, those who most effectively cooperate, those who most effectively are part of the whole life cycle, who work in concert with their environment around them. When you have one single species that just rises up and says, I'm the most fit, I'm taking everything, that's called cancer. And what Reaganomics is the cancer stage of capitalism. It is a distortion of Adam Smith's concept of regulated capitalism that he laid out in Wealth of Nations back in 1776, of what David Ricardo pointed out in his writings in 1814, 1816, 1818, in On Labor and On Profits. It's a distortion even of what Desmond de Tracy wrote about, who founded the French School of Liberal Economics. Thomas Jefferson secretly translated on behalf of his friend General Lafayette, knowing that if it became known that he had translated the writings of this economist, this was 1804, Jefferson was president. He did this in secret. Like, after he was done being president, every night for 3 or 4 hours, he translated this guy's writings, de Tracy's writings. And in his letter to Lafayette, which is now, you know, publicly available, he says, you know, don't let Napoleon know. It would cause a war if he knew that I was translating this into English so it can be published in the English-speaking world. But he did it. He felt it was that important. The liberal school of economics. So, anyhow, here we see the hollowing out of America, the shipping off of our jobs, the destruction of the counterweight to corporate power, which is union power, that brings balance into an economy. And 26 years of Reaganomics, we've got a lot more millionaires, a lot more billionaires, a lot more poor people, and a whole lot less middle class. And John McCain is going to give us more of the same. We'll see. 16 minutes past the hour.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
No, we don't need no thought control. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're still waiting for John Edwards to make his official announcement. His campaign has confirmed this. Barack Obama's campaign has confirmed it. Hillary Clinton's campaign has confirmed it. But he has not yet come out and spoken. There's a group of people waiting for him to. And when he does, we're going to try and pick up at least some piece of that and share it with you. There was a moment last night that was pretty mind-boggling on MSNBC. And a tip of the hat, by the way, to Carl Wolfson and Paul Pimentel, the host and producer of our morning show here on AM620 KPOJ, who picked up this audio off MSNBC and were kind enough to share it with me. This is after McCain won, Joe Scarborough and Pat Buchanan talking about what it meant. I mean, these guys are hardcore McCain haters, apparently. Just listen to this. Oh, hang on just a second.
Hang on just
a moment. Okay, we got
all of them except one.
Pause
for Obama.
No, I'm sorry.
Courtesy of the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, I can't pause that, so I can't play this. In any case, well, let's take your calls. 866-303-2270. Jake in Eureka, California. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Hey, with these two remaining Democratic candidates, Obama and Hillary, I think we need to ask ourselves these two questions: which one is more electable in November? and which will have coattails? And I think the answer to both those questions is Barack Obama. And I think he's more electable because he brings out the independents. He brings out people who've never even voted before, including young people. The turnout in places like South Carolina have been tremendous. And if you look at the red states, Hillary Clinton energizes the Republican base. And what you can see, what you see happening is a lot of these red state Democrats are endorsing Obama because they know in their state, if Hillary's the nominee, it's going to be difficult for Democrats to win in red states.
Yeah. Both candidates, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, both candidates have a set of net pluses and net minuses. I mean, I could argue each one of those points, the counter to each one of those points, and each one of those points are there and they're real. And it's we're just going to have to let the voters make up their minds here at this point. I mean, I'm stepping back from being an advocate for either of these candidates, other than, you know, as I've all along said, you know, I tend to be in favor mostly of John Edwards. John Edwards is out of the race now. I'm not saying I'm not in favor of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I think that they're both good candidates, and either one of them would make an excellent president, and far better than John McCain or any other Republican. But,
absolutely.
But I'm gonna wait and hear what the people say on Super Tuesday. Jake, thanks a lot for the call. Marie in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Marie.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I am fine.
Good. Listen, I just want to brush this by you since you are such a genius, and I really mean that. I think that the right-wing elements, such as Rush Limbaugh, and the Hannitys or whatever, are painting, I think it's a political tactic of them to paint McCain as a liberal in hopes of achieving what is happening now, which is tricking people into thinking that he's some kind of moderate.
Right. Which is
and
get the independents to vote for him.
Exactly. And in reality, they're applauding it because they know that McCain is like them.
I don't think that they're
very conservative.
Yeah, I know he is very conservative, but I don't think that they're that slick or sophisticated, frankly, Marie. I mean, it's a great conspiracy theory, would that they were thinking. Yeah, and it may work, actually. But, you know, it'll work despite them it may work because of them, but not because they're saying something that they don't actually believe. I think that these guys, what you have is the corporatist wing of the Republican Party, basically the millionaires. You know, Rush Limbaugh is there to represent the millionaires and cause Joe Sixpack to think, you know, this is Tom Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas, to cause the average person to think that somehow the interests of the millionaires are their interests. And, you know, that's something it's a tough job for him to do. But McCain is not so much the millionaire branch of the party. That's Mitt Romney. And
well,
that's why these guys are trying to line up behind Mitt Romney.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Just as you said on your show that Clinton refused to, when he came to office and he did not pursue the criminal possible ramifications of the Bush administration, Papa Bush. But the Clintons also had a chance to put McCain's career out to pasture. And that was when McCain in 1998 told that famous filthy joke about Chelsea Clinton. I don't know if you ever heard it. It was David Korn reported it on the Salon.
Hang on just a second, Marie. We
had
John
experience
McCain
of bringing 700 college kids
beg your pardon?
Here to New Orleans to work.
This is John Edwards
gave up
speaking.
Their spring break to come to New Orleans to work, to rehabilitate houses because of their
Marie, I'm gonna have to drop
as
call
Americans.
Here. We're gonna have to go to break in just a second, but John Edwards is speaking.
I began my presidential campaign here to remind the country that we, as citizens and as a government, have a moral responsibility to each other. And what we do together matters. We must do better if we want to live up to the great promise of this country that we all love so much. It is appropriate that I come here today. It's time for me to step aside history can blaze its path. We do not know who will take the final step to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but what we do know is that our Democratic Party.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
The 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Los Angeles to New York and all places in between. Senator John Edwards right now giving his I don't know what you call it. I'm out of here speech, but he's not. He's very much saying I'm not out of here. He's talking about how he spoke with Senators Clinton and Obama earlier and got a commitment from both of them to put the ending of poverty in America as central to their campaigns and their presidency should they be elected, and that he's going to continue the good fight to end poverty in the United States. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez is with us. Robert Menendez, the senator from New Jersey. Pushed the wrong button there. Senator, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I'm curious your take on the... first of all, I understand that you are... of course, you're a superdelegate, that you are endorsing Hillary Clinton in this race.
I am endorsing Senator Clinton.
How is John Edwards' withdrawal from the race going to change the potential fortunes of Senator Clinton and Senator Obama?
Well, I think that John Edwards' voters are naturally Hillary Clinton supporters. Well, because his base of support was disproportionately blue-collar voters who are hurting under the Bush economy. And I think these voters will see Senator Clinton, in terms of their two choices that are left, as someone who's going to continue to champion their cause and from day one of her presidency, fight for them. I think the two issues that poverty, the economy, and health care were what Senator Edwards championed, and those have been the particularly on the economy and healthcare, the focal points of Hillary's campaign. So I think they're going to find in her someone who, of the choices left for them, are the most powerful voice on the issues they care about.
That would be a marvelous thing. To what extent, I mean, her husband said that he was going to end welfare as we know it. He dramatically slashed welfare programs and declared that the era of big government was over. I mean, he had been listening to Bob Rubin and Alan Greenspan and was buying into much of Milton Friedman's economic theories, in my humble opinion, frankly. And I'm wondering how she's going to separate herself or differentiate herself from those policies.
Well, Hillary's her own person, and I've seen her in my work in the Senate. I saw her in my work when I was in the House of Representatives. Let me just say, first of all, look at what she's talking about in her economic plan. She's talking about freezing these mortgage foreclosures that are going on and freezing the rates on the adjustments for 5 years. Those aren't the economic philosophies of Bob Rubin or others. It's her own philosophy.
Right.
And I think those are central to the type of thinking that she has about where we go in this foreclosure crisis that we have. And then in terms of her economic stimulus and her view of the how we get Americans back to work. And so I think she's her own person. She speaks for her own politics and her own economic views, and I think those that she has been promoting in this campaign are in essence quite different than you might have expected from the Rubens of the world.
During the last 7 years of the Bush administration, we've lost 3 million manufacturing jobs in the United States. What would Senator Clinton do to bring those back?
I think she's talked about how, in fact, what we need to do is look at a paradigm that says we can have trade, but trade has to be fair and balanced, not just free. I think she's looked at how do we make investments. She's talked about the Green Jobs Initiative, something that I think is both important in terms of creating economic opportunity for people in this country and also about breaking our dependency on foreign oil so that we're not sending our money abroad to countries that have a much different set of values than we do. And so that green energy job, the green collar jobs that she's talked about, I think are central to both dealing with a new economy, meeting our environmental challenges, meeting our energy independent challenges, and creating new jobs, high-paying jobs here at home. I think that's certainly a view of the future, of the immediate future under a Clinton presidency.
What do you see, sir? We're talking with Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey. What do you see as the major differentiators between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama in terms of policy?
Well, certainly, I think Floridians saw yesterday the differences and where she got more votes than John McCain, and she got in a record number of primary Democratic primary voters for in Florida history, 1.5 million Democrats who cast their ballots and overwhelmingly gave Hillary the support in a very diverse state that will be critical to win in November so that we can capture the White House and lead the country in a different direction. I think, look, the issues are partly based on who has the experience to make the change that we want. I believe Hillary has the experience necessary to make the change that we need in this country. Mm-hmm. I think that on her health care plan, I think that hers clearly provides the universal coverage that we want for everyone. Doesn't leave anybody out at the end of the day. And I also believe that on the economy, she is talking about the immediate need to stop a couple of million American families from losing their homes. And at the same time, how do we transition this economy to one that works for working Americans? And I think their views in that respect hers is much more aggressive and progressive than Senator Obama's.
Great. Well, Senator Menendez, I know you can only stay with us for a few minutes. I wanted to thank you so much for dropping by and good speaking with you.
Good being with you, Tom, and thank you for what you do every day on Air America.
Thank you. Good talking with you. Senator Bob Menendez, the Democrat from New Jersey, and a superdelegate out there speaking on behalf of Hillary Clinton. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jim in Anaheim, California. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I could talk the economy with you for hours because I believe, number one, that's going to be the biggest thing by the time we get to the 08 election. But I didn't call for that. I called because of my disappointment in in Edwards dropping out. I sent you last week the letter from Martin Luther King III that you so wonderfully read on the air in hopes that it would spur people to understand that John Edwards is the real thing. I am unfortunately a little disappointed that the Kerry and the Kennedy endorsements got way more publicity than did the Martin Luther King III, which I think is an incredible letter to attest to his credibility. And I just think we lost potentially our last great hope for really coming out of all the problems that this administration has created for the last 8 years.
Jim, respectfully, whenever any of us says that because a particular politician is no longer in a race or a different politician is taking over and therefore we've lost our greatest hope, we're forgetting what the basis of this country is. The first three words of the Constitution are not who is the president. It's we the people. And the greatest hope for the future of America is not Barack Obama, it's not Hillary Clinton, it wasn't John Edwards. It's you, it's me, it's all the people listening to this radio program, it's all the people all across America who are getting active, it's kids on college campuses who are passing out flyers and organizing, it's the new SDS chapters that are organizing, it's the new Young Republican chapters that are organizing. It's people who are getting organized, who are getting active, who are engaging themselves, who are informing themselves across the political spectrum, and who are engaging the issues and participating in debate. That is the great hope for the future of this country. And I think that, you know, what I was just talking with Senator Menendez about, that, you know, he's here. We have Hillary Clinton coming out, and you know, the argument now is who's the most progressive. I mean, that I haven't heard that in the Democratic Party for 25, 30 years. Have you?
That's very true, Tom.
And it's because of you and me. And I don't mean me like, you know, me, Tom Hartman, big shot. I mean, you know, that I'm some kind of big shot or anything like that. I mean, because people like you and me have been out there saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we care about this country and we're progressives and we're liberals and we want change.
Well, I think what you're doing, Tom, is very important to change, and we definitely need change. I mean, we are in a position right now where this country probably has never seen, and I think that as you spoke about the economics earlier, we haven't even begun to see the damage from the 7 years of this administration.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
I mean,
the fact of the matter is we're spending $300 billion this year in taxes on to pay interest payments on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in order to make the economy look good when, in fact, it was falling like a stone. And we're paying $300 billion this year in taxes just on the interest on the money that Reagan borrowed. Wait until we start paying taxes on the interest on the money that Bush has borrowed. It's nuts. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Kent in Texas. Hey, Kent, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to comment on the senator's statement that the natural constituency for Edwards supporters is to move over to Hillary.
I think that's what you would expect a Hillary advocate to say. Had he been an Obama advocate, he would have said the same thing about Obama.
Well, I realize that, but first time in my life, I gave money to a political campaign this year to give it to Senator Edwards.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Hillary's going to have to do a lot of work to get my support.
Yeah, and hopefully she will. And I'm there with you, by the way, Kent. You know, I gave a little bit of money to Dennis Kucinich, and I gave a lot of money. Well, not, I don't know how much a lot is, but, you know, 5-6 times I gave $100 each. So I've probably given somewhere between $500 and $700 to the John Edwards campaign. Mm-hmm. And that's the first political campaign outside of a local campaign that I've given money to in probably 25 years. And I agree. I was very energized by that candidacy. And so the challenge now in my mind, and this is where I was encouraged by hearing Bob Menendez say, you know, no, Hillary's the most progressive one. So now there's going to be surrogates for Obama coming out and going, no, Obama is the most, Barack Obama is the most progressive one. And let the battle begin, you know, let the competition begin. It's great. I think it's a marvelous thing. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. We need to move this country in a direction that is going to change fundamentally, take us back to the ideals that this country was founded upon, that every person has the opportunity, the equality, the of opportunity to achieve their greatest potential. And we, the people, as a society, are going to help make that happen. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Yeah, well, we're not waiting anymore. We have to get out there and get active to change the world, like SEIU 1199 and 200,000 health and hospital workers fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, keeping our families healthy. They say it should be a right, not a privilege. John Edwards, just a few moments ago, speaking to his supporters. Play this clip, and then I want to get Ellen Ratner's take on it.
And I want to say a personal word to those I've seen literally in the last few days. Those I saw in Oklahoma yesterday, in Missouri, last night in Minnesota, who came to me and said, don't forget us. Speak for us. We need your voice. I want you to know that you almost changed my mind. Because I hear your voice, I feel you. And your cause is our cause. Your country needs you. Every single one of you. All of you who have been involved in this campaign and this movement for change and this cause, we need you. It is in our hour of need that your country needs you. Don't turn away, because we have not just the city of New Orleans to rebuild. We have an American house to rebuild. This work goes on. It goes on right here in Musicians Village. There are homes to build here and in neighborhoods all along the Gulf. The work goes on for the students in crumbling schools, just yearning for a chance to get ahead. It goes on for daycare workers, for steel workers, risking their lives in cities all across this country. And the work goes on for 200,000 men and women who wore the uniform of the United States of America, proud veterans, who go to sleep every night under bridges or in shelters or on grates, just as the people we just saw on the way here today. Their cause is our cause. Their struggle is our struggle. Their dreams are our dreams. Do not turn away from these great struggles before us. Do not give up on the causes that we have fought for. Do not walk away from what's possible, because it's time for all of us together, to make the two Americas one. Thank you. God bless you. And let's go to work.
And let's go to work. Ellen Ratner. Your thoughts
well,
on
I thought
John
it was
Edwards.
A very
eloquent speech, and yes. I'm very glad he did it in New Orleans. You know, my niece and nephew have done a lot of work, actually, in New Orleans around the homeless issue, and, of course, our project is only about a 45-minute drive from the heart of New Orleans.
Right.
So I think that it was very mighty of him. Now, the question is, what happens to his supporters and his delegates, et cetera? And my guess is he had 14% in Florida yesterday. So if I were a guessing person, I'd say about 5% of those go to Hillary and about 9% go to Obama.
So Florida was winner take all on the Republican side, and it was proportional on the Democratic side?
No, there was nothing. No, I'm just saying hypothetically.
No, but assuming that those delegates had been allocated, or assuming that Hillary Clinton is successful and they do get seated at the convention, do you know if Florida was winner take all or proportional?
You know, I don't even know that they had decided that at that
point. I see.
I know that the Democratic National Committee is having a conference call today at around 3 o'clock to talk about this. And as you know, Hillary Clinton had a conference call with just two of my three best friends, Stephanie Tubb Jones of Cleveland, Ohio, and the kid I went to school with, Lee Fisher, who is the lieutenant governor in Ohio, who have signed on to Hillary a very long time ago to discuss delegates. Now, why they have Ohio people talking about Florida delegates is pretty interesting, except for all the snowbirds who are down in Florida from Ohio, which is, I call it Ohio South.
Well, I grew up in Michigan. There's a lot of Michiganders down in Florida, too. Yeah, the whole Rust Belt area there is well represented in Florida.
Exactly. So, I just don't know. I mean, I'm curious, Tom, what's your guess about what happens to all those Edwards folks?
I think some of them are going to split for Obama and some are going to split for Hillary Clinton. I don't think that there is a clear definition yet.
Pollsters before when it really looked like it was a five-way race or four-way race, essentially added up the Obama and the Edwards vote and a little bit the Richardson vote and called it the anti-Hillary vote.
Right.
Now, these were Hillary Clinton people who sort of did that kind of mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people consider the Edwards vote the anti-Hillary vote.
But see, I don't think it is. I think a small percentage of the Edwards vote was the anti-Hillary vote, and I think a small percentage of the Obama vote is the anti-Hillary vote. But I think most people are voting for, not against.
Well, that's true, but it'll be interesting to see which is their second choice right now.
I think my guess, you know, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, okay, do it right now, it would be that it would probably be fairly evenly split. I think that you're going to find a lot of people for whom John Edwards had a lot of appeal, who are going to say, okay, Hillary Clinton has become far more progressive than her husband was as president. She is a strong candidate who has the Democratic machine. She can beat John McCain. And they're going to go with Hillary Clinton partly out of pragmatic reasons and partly out of political agreement reasons. And then you've got other people who are going to say, you know, Barack Obama is the fresh face. He's new. He's more likely to take a break, to break with the policies of the past and really produce radical and transformational change in the United States. And we desperately need that. And we're going to take a chance, as it were, with a guy who's only run for federal elective office once, never for a national elective office, and go with Barack Obama. And either way, frankly, I think, you know, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, they're going to encounter the Republican machine, which is going to be throwing either misogyny and sexism or racism and anti middle name Husseinism, whatever you want to call that. You know, the fear, you know, this viral email that Barack Obama is secretly a Muslim and all this kind of nonsense. They are going to slime them and smear them, and you know, the Swift Boat veterans with John Kerry in Vietnam.
There's a lot of Swift voting this time around.
Yeah, it's nothing compared to what's coming down the road. I guarantee you that.
I tend to agree with you. Also, just today, Lucchese still won't take a position on waterboarding, except to say it doesn't happen right now.
Yeah, what a surprise. he's keeping George Bush out of jail, basically. Ellen Radner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks so much, Ellen.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. program. Now, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. John Edwards announcing his departure today, this just moments ago in New Orleans.
I began my presidential campaign here to remind the country that we, as citizens and as a government, have a moral responsibility to each other. And what we do together matters. We must do better if we want to live up to the great promise of this country that we all love so much. It is appropriate that I come here today. It's time for me to step aside so that history can blaze its path. We do not know who will take the final steps to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but what we do know is that our Democratic Party will make history. We will be strong, we will be unified, and with our convictions and a little backbone, we will take back the White House in November, and we'll create hope and opportunity for this country.
There you go. John Edwards saying goodbye to the campaign. Jennifer Palmieri is with us. She is the Senior Vice President of Communications at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. But perhaps more significantly, in 2004, she was the National Press Secretary for the Edwards for President campaign. And in 2008, she was a senior strategist to the Edwards campaign, a former strategist with the Edwards for President campaign. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
I have pretty openly on this program been I haven't formally endorsed John Edwards because right. I felt like, you know, people should make up their own mind and it should all play out. But people know where my sentiments lie. I think I speak for many of my listeners. I feel a great sense of loss today.
I know.
On the other hand, there's, you know, every what's the old cliche, but there's some truth to it. You know, every time a door opens, another door, or a door closes, another door opens. Every change can be made into a change for the better.
Right.
What's the meaning of John Edwards' departure?
I mean, I think that you're, I mean, it could be made into a change that's better, certainly for the party, and, you know, and perhaps even for the Edwardses personally. I think that he's talked a lot about staying in until the convention, and I think that he was very sincere about, in doing that. But I think after South Carolina, it just seemed to, you know, he really cares a great deal about poverty. He's also really committed to getting universal health care, and also, you know, combating global warming. And I think he thought that if he got out now, he's in the best position to leverage some impact so that the campaign, you know, that the remaining candidates will pick this stuff up and talk mm-hmm. about this more.
Yeah, in fact, in his farewell address, as it were, I guess you'd mm-hmm. call it that, today, he said that he had personally spoken
right.
in the last 24 hours with both Senator Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton and received from both of them the commitment that they were going to put poverty and the issues of the working class of America, working class people in America, and those in poverty, at the forefront of their agendas.
Yes, and they did. Yeah, he did, and they. I think that they may even do a poverty tour. I think both of them committed, if whoever is the nominee,
mm-hmm.
that they would actually go out on the road with him, and that they made a real commitment. And it's not as if. You know, it's not as if Senator Clinton or Senator Obama, you know, it's a stretch for them to support support anti-poverty efforts. But I am really proud of him for, he started talking about this in 2004. I think that a lot of things, including bad economics, helped to make it a big issue, but he really has been instrumental in having it become a major issue in the presidential campaign. And I'm really glad, you know, I'm glad that he went back to New Orleans. I think that was a great way to kind of put a capstone on this. But it is, it's sad, though, too.
Yeah. To what extent do you have any sense, personally, mm-hmm. and I can understand where you may not want to take this question, so feel free.
Okay.
Do you have any sense of the two remaining candidates,
mm-hmm.
which has the greatest probability of carrying on the mission and the work of John Edwards in an absolutely unambiguous fashion?
That is a difficult question, Tom. I think that it, you know, it sort of goes back to the differences between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama writ large, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's great on the inspiration. I think that it is, he's very suited, temperamentally, to talking about poverty. It's not as if I've been keeping score, but I suspect he may have talked about it more than Senator Clinton. But, you know, she has really definitive plans of the best way to get there. And I know that, you know, she might not be as inspiring as Obama is on it or as John is on it, but I don't think that
she's done it.
Less committed.
You know, she worked with the Children's Defense Fund years ago.
Right. I mean, she has a long history on it. And, you know, I also worked for President Clinton for 8 years. And, you know, she was always the one, you know, that was sort of carrying the torch for the left flank, if you will. I'm sure she would not love me to describe it that way. But, mm-hmm. you know, she was always the one, you know, you always be like, well, you know, how's Mrs. Clinton going to feel about, you know, that drop in food stamps or, you know, or particularly the welfare reform bill is very controversial and concerned about how that would affect children. So
right.
This is not a stretch for her, you know, but it's – so I think that both of them – it just – and I know that John and Elizabeth are going to be watching closely to see for the next, you know, coming days how they both handle it.
Right. You were the White House Deputy Press Secretary from 98 to 2001 during
right.
during the Clinton presidency.
Yes, I was.
And I'm wondering – you know, we were talking with Bob Menendez mm-hmm. in the last hour, and, you know, I pointed out to him that Bill Clinton in many ways had governed in a Republican light fashion in some of these issues. He said that the era of big government is over.
Right.
You know, Bob, you know, there's the legendary story that Bob Rubin himself tells about him and Alan Greenspan setting Bill Clinton down 2 weeks before the inauguration and saying, we know you ran as a progressive, but you're not going to govern as one. Let us tell you the facts of life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, ending welfare as we know it and programs like that.
Right.
And I asked Bob Menendez, you know, how is Hillary Clinton going to differentiate herself from her husband's record that many progressives were frankly unhappy with, not
right.
to mention things like fair, like, you know, the so-called free trade.
Right.
And he said, you know, she's very much her own person. You were there in the White House during
right.
those years. To what extent, if I may ask, I mean, because I don't think you're working for any of these people right now. So.
Right, I'm such a free agent.
Yeah, yeah. To what extent?
I probably need to work for Barack Obama now because he's the only one that I haven't, and then I'm going for the trifecta.
To what extent is Hillary Clinton really her own person on these issues? To what extent did she bite her tongue when her husband was president or push him, on the other hand? And how do you think that she would govern differently than Bill Clinton if she were to be the nominee and ultimately the president?
I mean, I've always had, you know, you're sort of reading her mind at this point, but I've always had
sure.
the sense that she was more his conscience on questions about how to have things, welfare reform and fighting poverty and helping kids and certainly and obviously healthcare,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she was so involved in that. So I think that I had the sense that she was probably always sort of pushing him to the left, and I think that she was less willing to accept, you know, the cold hard facts as presented by Bob Rubin and Alan Greenspan. I feel like it's sort of unfair to compare what, you know, what Bill Clinton said in 1992 with our 2008 eyes because.
Yeah.
If it weren't for Bill Clinton, I would say we're standing on his shoulders so much, in some ways. We didn't have, I think that you want to win partial victories, and I don't know that a different Democrat could have gotten elected, and that he did bring the country along in a lot of important issues, and he's helped create the environment where I think, you know, the next Democratic president, the next progressive president, you know, will probably be more forward-leaning on this.
Well, the reality is that these are different times. That in 92, people
right.
were still buying Reaganomics. People were still buying into trickle-down economics. People were still, you know, thinking that the Lafler curve made some sense. That the end, you know, that when Reagan came in and basically declared war on the New Deal and started rolling back the New Deal, there were a lot of Americans said, yeah, that's fine, that's a good thing, and it seemed to bring prosperity. It seemed, you know, NAFTA seemed to be, you know, WTO, GATT, all. It seemed at first like, oh, this is a great thing, and only now are we looking back and saying, you know. know, we've had 26 years of death and destruction here in the, to a large extent. Right. And you know, I mean, Bill Clinton did a few good things, but I don't even mean that gratuitously. I mean, he did a number of good things and some things that I disagree with. But interesting. Jennifer, we're out of time, but I thank you so much for dropping by and and sharing your insights with us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Jennifer Palmieri, the Senior Vice President for Communications at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
Know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground. And I won't back down.
21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, my friends. We will be picking up your phone calls in just a moment. David Bender, however, is with us. He's Air America's senior political correspondent, the former host of Politically Direct and Ring of Fire on Air America Radio. And next Tuesday night, along with Mark Green, he will be anchoring election night coverage of the 22 Super Tuesday states that will be voting that day. And also a great guy and a good friend, David Bender. Welcome to the program.
Tom, it's always a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you with us. David, I'm really interested. You're a very, very insightful political analyst. How is Hillary Clinton going to deal with misogyny and sexism? And how is Barack Obama going to deal with this viral email alleging the version one was that, you know, his middle name is Hussein, that he's...
His middle name is Hussein. Let's be clear. Yes. That I think he needs to acknowledge.
Yes. And then the second version of the viral email now is that, I guess he is a Christian, but the church he attends is a black supremacist church.
Right.
And that one now has gone viral. How does he deal with these things?
Well, you know, and you also raised Hillary Clinton and misogyny, first off, I want to say I was listening to you talking with Jennifer Palmieri, who's terrific, and like you, I have not endorsed anyone on the air, but I have a very strong feeling for John Edwards, and I thought what he did today, ending his campaign as he began at New Orleans and getting the pledges of these two candidates, was remarkably important and consistent with who he's been throughout this campaign.
Yeah.
And deserves an enormous amount of credit, and this is his day, and he's handling it with the dignity he's brought to this whole thing. I will say, however, that I think it's almost a certainty now that because he has extracted this pledge from both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to make poverty a central tenet of their ongoing campaign, and as the nominee to a campaign with him around the country on this issue of poverty, he's not going to endorse. I think that sends a clear signal that if and particularly Barack Obama was hoping for an endorsement a la Ted Kennedy before Super Tuesday, I can't see it happening now.
No, he's pushing an issue. He's not pushing a candidate.
Well, that's right, and that's got to be considered a win for Hillary Clinton because, you know, in the, as people refer to it, the John Edwards primary, that's a significant thing. By staying out, a lot of people who might otherwise have followed his lead to Barack Obama, which is where people thought he might go, will now, on their own, probably split between a Hillary Clinton and a Barack Obama. Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. But to your point, I think it's first on the issue of misogyny, and there is no question that sexism is as much a part of how we are seeing this campaign and how many voters are seeing Hillary Clinton's candidacy as the racial issue and racism is, much more overtly perhaps in some places, but no less pernicious in the impact.
You know, as a nation, we gave the vote to African-American men 70 years before we gave it to white women.
That's absolutely true, but, you know, African-American men were lynched for using it for a long time.
Right. And are still being disenfranchised from voting today.
Racism
is still with us, misogyny is still with us.
And unfortunately, and this is what has been so difficult to watch in the last couple of weeks, where all of a sudden there's been some sort of competition as to who is the more oppressed, and also the perception, whether accurate or not, that African Americans are being played off of Hispanics in terms of how this election is going. Leaving all of that aside, to your point or question, it seems to me that one of the things that Hillary did so very well at the beginning of this campaign was to run as Hillary. She didn't run as Hillary Clinton, even. It was Hillary in 2008. Right. And in the last 2 or 3 weeks, Tom, we've seen it. It's now the Clintons. And that is a disaster for her, in my view.
Yeah, it's backfired terribly.
And she's allowed that to happen. This is not just Bill Clinton freelancing. They made a decision after Iowa that, you know, they could lose this thing and they were going to go to the whip, as they do in horse racing terms, and do whatever it took to get across that finish line. And that meant becoming not Hillary, independent woman, but Hillary Rodham Clinton, wife of the president, and really running, you know, as a team. Mm-hmm. And I think that really undermines the argument about misogyny. I wanted to see her succeed on her own, and now it's going to be hard to view it that way. On the quickly on the issue of Barack Hussein Obama, I'm looking forward to the moment. Do you know, I'm sure you do, and you may have even talked about it, what Hussein means?
I don't.
I didn't either. And I took a moment to look it up a couple weeks ago when this email started circulating. Hussein means beautiful child or handsome child. And it is an honorific given around the world when new parents name their baby Hussein, give that middle name. I'd love for Barack Hussein Obama to embrace that.
Yeah.
As handsome one, beautiful one. Let Oprah introduce him that way and explain what Hussein means instead of having it be he's part of the terrorists. That would do more linguistically to turn this on its ear and put to rest these again pernicious lies.
Yeah, he has to figure out a way to bring that front and center and turn it into a positive.
Well, let's tell people what Hussein means.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great start. Hussein means beautiful child or blessed child, right?
Beautiful or handsome child, yes.
Yeah, that's Arabic, I'm saying.
I think that's right, exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Remarkable. David Blender, Air America's senior political correspondent, the former host of Politically Direct, Ring of Fire on Air America. And next Tuesday night, along with Mark Green, he will be anchoring the election night coverage of the 22 Super Tuesday states that will be voting that day. David, thanks so much for being with us today.
Tom, a pleasure. Hope you'll join us there on election night as you have before.
I certainly will. We'll see you then. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Four minutes past the hour. Our program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Some of the questions, some of the folks I've been hanging out in the chat room here during the break. You can get to our live chat room, by the way. Go to tomhartman.com, and we actually, you know, interact with each other, hang out, and talk to each other in real time during the program every day. And some of the questions, is John Edwards' name still going to be on the ballot? And I think we can safely say that in probably all the states, it's conceivable that in some of the states where they're using electronic touchscreen machines that they might be able to quickly reprogram them and pull his name off the ballot. But odds are these ballots have already been printed, these computers have already been programmed, et cetera, and John Edwards' name will be on the ballot. So then the question is, well, you know, if I like Edwards, shouldn't I still vote for him or can I still vote for him? No. Don't do that, because John Edwards is pulling out now because he wants to unite the Democratic Party. He does not want to divide the Democratic Party. He's saying to you and to me, pick one of these two candidates. And he's clearly saying they're both good candidates, because if he thought that it wasn't the case, he would have endorsed one over the other. He's saying, pick one of these two candidates and work with them and push them in this in these directions, and you keep involved. I mean, that was his message. He repeated that at least a half a dozen times during his farewell speech, that, you know, we have to be involved. We must be involved. Bunny in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bunny, welcome.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say, first of all, I would absolutely love to see either a woman or a African-American in the White House in sometime during my lifetime. But I, like you, have been for Edwards for all the reasons. I mean, he's for everything I'm for. But I sort of agree with a previous caller that he was our last hope, because Many polls before, of course, the corporate media started marginalizing Edwards. In any matchup, he clearly could beat any Republican.
Right.
Also, given the misogyny and the racism you've been talking about, and that 50% of Americans won't vote for a woman and over 50% won't vote for a black person, and given that even some Democrats feel this way,
we just have to change those numbers, Bunny. I mean, because the bottom line is right now the nominee of the Democratic Party is either going to be an African-American man or a woman, a Caucasian woman, a white woman. And, you know, it's going to be either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And we've got to now be working on how do we push through that? Not the fact of that, but how do we push through the slime that the Republicans are going to throw at either one of those nominees based on just those two simple things?
Well, that's the other thing I was going to bring up. Given the slime that's already being tossed at Barack and the swift voting that's going to happen to either one of them, whoever is picked, I mean...
Oh, and the right-wingers have rolled out today in Hollywood a movie called Hillary the Movie, which is the new version of the Swift Boat Veterans videos on John Kerry. I mean, it has already started from the right.
Okay, so my question is, how the heck are you, and John Edwards for that matter, remaining so positive that we can take back the White House? I'm really so disheartened. I haven't felt this disheartened since Bush first made it to the White House.
Yeah.
I thought we had hope, and now, I mean, I just think we've got the wrong candidates at this time. I mean, right. I really think that Edwards was the only one. You know, I think only a white man in today's climate could have beaten, which is clearly going to be another white man.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I think that I liked Edwards on the issues, frankly. That was my thing. I was not so concerned about the electability of a woman or African American. I really think that much of America can get beyond that. But to your question of how is it that I can remain optimistic and that John Edwards can remain optimistic, we are at, I really believe this, and the evidence is all around us. We are at a transformational time in the history of the United States. People are now clearly seeing what they were not seeing in 1992 when Bill Clinton was running. They are clearly seeing that 26, 27 years of Reaganomics is destroying this country. That the conservative economic policies, that the conservative social policies, that the politics of division and hatred and fear, that the use of war as an instrument of politics, as George Bush did, you know, coming out back in 1998, telling his biographer, Mickey Herskowitz, that if he was elected president, the first thing he'd do is invade Iraq, because it would get him political points. It would allow him to get his domestic agenda, specifically the privatization of Social Security, passed. He thought a war in Iraq would do that. All that stuff, Americans are fed up with it. That we have seen it, we get it, we're over it, and I am convinced, I really and truly believe this, this is not happy talk, that Americans are awakening in incredible numbers, particularly you see folks like, you know, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert out there reaching out to young people, right across the board, an entire new generation coming along and waking up, and I think that we're at a political point that is very much like the mid and late 60s, and that is very much like the early 1930s. We are at one of those, you know, Robbie Botcher says they come every 30 years, one of those major turning points here in the United States, and that turn is either going to be Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, and, you know, we have to pick one or the other. Bunny, I got to move along. I thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm very disheartened, of course. About 10 years ago when I first saw John Edwards interviewed, I thought to myself, this man should be president. So
yeah.
This was way back. Now that, you know, it's between Senators Clinton and Obama, I think what they should do is go on the offensive against the Republicans.
Against
McCain. They should stop shooting arrows at each other.
Yep.
And start shooting them at McCain and Romney.
Yep.
McCain, for example, has said something about being 100 years in Iraq. He's done a takeoff on the Beach Boys song, and he goes around singing Bomb, Bomb, Bomb Iran.
Yep.
Romney has said we should double the size of Guantanamo. And I would like to see them start going on the offensive and putting the war also on the front burner.
Yeah, very well said, Bernice. Thank you very much. And, in fact, to that point, this now I can play the audio that I couldn't before. And again, a tip of the hat to Paul Pimentel and Carl Wolfson, the producer and talent here on the local show on AM 620 KPOJ. From last night, from the MSNBC coverage of the election. This is Joe Scarborough and Pat Buchanan talking about McCain winning in Florida and what that means.
If he wins this thing, I think they're going to say, well, it looks like he's the guy. But I'll tell you, here's a guy basically, what does he say? The jobs are never coming back. The illegals are never going home. But we're going to have a lot more wars.
We're going to start a lot of wars. He has promised, for the record, Keith, John McCain's platform, and it certainly looks inviting for the fall. He has promised less jobs and more wars. Now, that's something we can all rally behind. Back to you, Keith.
No. I'm not saying a word.
No, you don't have to. John McCain's already said it.
Yeah, I'm not saying a word. It's too. I'm not saying a word.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann just, oh, man. Talk about tossing him a line. Oh, my. Kyle in San Rafael, California. Hey, Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Before I go to Edwards, I want to thank you so much and praise you for that segment you did in the first hour on Bush's illegal signing statements, which are immoral, illegal, and
unconstitutional. Yeah.
And you delineated in short order what's wrong with what he did yesterday and the fact that it is by itself impeachable.
Yeah.
And I blame more than any other person in this country, Nancy Pelosi, for stopping Conyers. And this is something that's got to be dealt with inside the Democratic Party. If the Democrats can't find a way to move her on this issue quickly, I believe she has to be impeached. And I speak as somebody
that ain't going to happen, Kyle.
And
again, let's stop the circular firing squad. Let's push her to do what she's doing.
I point to her with extreme anger as somebody who's watched her her career from a Northern California vantage point. Edwards, this is a tragic day in the history of our country because now we are left with Obama, who I will reluctantly vote for, and Hillary Clinton, who is, as Robert Scheer points out in today's column, which is absolutely brilliant if you haven't read it, really nothing more than the same old corporate stuff. And I'm my voice is breaking.
I get it, Kyle. But you know, you say this is a terrible day. The point I think that John Edwards was making, he didn't come out and explicitly say this, but the strategic calculus here that I'm guessing is that he wants to make sure he got it that he wasn't going to be the nominee, right? You know, he didn't win four primaries, and he really needed to win South Carolina. He got it; he wasn't going to be the nominee. And so, if we had a brokered convention, if the Democrats had a brokered convention, then the nominee would be going into, you know, you'd have John McCain, who's the presumptive nominee, and I think, frankly, after Super Tuesday, he's going to, you know, 1 week from now, from yesterday, he's going to clearly be the nominee. In my opinion,
yeah.
and probably most other people's opinions, and yet if we still didn't have a clear Democratic Party winner, then you would have the Democratic candidate going into the general election with independents and moderates and folks saying, well, you know, that Democratic candidate didn't get the full support of the party. Why should they get my support? So he's making sure that whoever the nominee is, one of these two people, actually has the majority of the votes of the people of the United States before they go into the election. I think that's a good thing. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day.
5 days a week.
Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, 9.5 minutes before the hour, John Edwards.
Universal health care for every man, woman, and child in America. That is our cause.
Woo!
And we do this for each other in America. We don't turn away from a neighbor in their time of need, because every one of us know that but for the grace of God, there goes us. The American people have never stopped doing this, even when their government walked away. And walked away it has, from hardworking people. And yes, from the poor, those who live in poverty in this country. For decades, we stopped focusing on those struggles. They didn't register in political polls. They didn't get us votes. And so we stopped talking about it. I don't know how it started. I don't know when our party began to turn away from the cause of working people. From the fathers who were working three jobs, literally just to pay the rent. Mothers sending their kids to bed, wrapped up in their clothes and in coats because they couldn't afford to pay for heat. We know that our brothers and sisters have been bullied into believing that they can't organize and can't put a union in the workplace. Well, in this campaign, we didn't turn our heads. We looked them square in the eye and we said, we see you, we hear you, and we are with you, and we will never forget you. And I have a feeling that if the leaders of our great Democratic Party continue to hear the voices of working people, a proud progressive will occupy the White House.
There you go. A proud progressive will occupy the White House. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number. Jack in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Jack.
Hey, hi, Tom. Oh, man, listen to that last cut. Again, I'm just so disappointed as a Californian not being able to vote my first choice due to our goofy nominating process. But that being said, and the reasons you and your callers have all said very well about John Edwards, I want to take to task some of your callers who have called in, primarily some of your earlier callers, whining about, oh, they can't vote for Obama because of this, or can't vote for Clinton because of
that. That's where I said it's time to stop the circular firing squad.
Yeah, I just want to reach
the enemy is John McCain.
Yeah, I want to reach through the radio and shake these people and say, wake up. It's not about that anymore. It's about November. And
yeah.
Remember the lesson of 2000? I still hold a deep, burning grudge against Ralph Nader for letting his critical thinking skills get overridden by his ego.
Yeah,
he happened.
Yeah, and God bless David Cobb when he ran as the Green Party nominee in the 2004 election, and explicitly said to people in purple states, in states where, you know, it was a toss up, don't vote for me, vote for the Democrat, you know, vote for John Kerry. And you know, I have so much respect for David Cobb for the way he ran that campaign, and I'm so disappointed in the way Ralph Nader did in 2000. And although we all know it wasn't Ralph Nader who caused George Bush to become president of the United States, it was the Supreme Court, and it was, you know, clear illegal activities, you know, the disenfranchisement of 80,000 people down in Florida. But let's not refight that battle. You're absolutely right, though. We've got to wake up and say it's about beating McCain. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Janice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Janice.
Hi, Tom. I, too, am really sad about John Edwards. But I just want to say I am going to support Hillary. And I'm not going to go on why. I just want to say to the Obama people that I wish they would think and listen to him when he talks, especially to that man who called earlier about he was in a union when Clinton was in. Well, both Clinton and Obama voted for the Peru free trade deal. I just hope people don't vote for Obama because of what they don't like. You know, they want to throw about Hillary Clinton. They don't like Hillary Clinton, so they're going to vote for Obama. I mean, let's not forget, he voted for Condoleezza Rice a lot. You know, he's for nuclear power. We just have to be honest.
We need to be pushing both of them in a more progressive direction. I mean, that's
exactly
the bottom line of the political reality. And rather than voting against Obama, I commend you for voting for Hillary. But I think that it's unwise for any of us to vote against Obama. Or let me flip that around. If somebody's voting for Barack Obama, I commend them for voting for Barack Obama. But I think that anybody who votes against Hillary Clinton is making a mistake. We need to stop the circular firing squad. Janice, thank you very much. Well said. Richard in Alameda, California. Hey, Richard.
How you doing? First off, I wanted to thank you for a couple of things. One, the intelligent conversations. Every time I listen to you, my IQ goes up 2 points.
Well, thank you, Richard.
The other thing was bringing up LBJ a while back in regard to the hurricanes. Unfortunately, he's sort of been stricken from the public mind and the record. I worked for Kerry last time, and I was very disheartened at the Democratic convention when the only progressive U.S. president, Democratic president, that wasn't mentioned was Lyndon Johnson. It was as if he was a persona non grata.
Now, if it weren't for the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson was one of our great presidents.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think Vietnam was something he was reluctantly dragged down the road to. If you listen to, or read the transcripts from the White House tapes, you really get an idea about that. But mostly what I wanted to say was I have volunteered for Barack Obama, and I've decided to vote for Barack Obama as well as work for him for a basic reason. If and this is while Edwards was still in the race, et cetera. My wife is very much for Edwards. But I began to feel that an important issue in this country is the race card, but I want to turn it on its ear. I'm Jewish, arguably white, I guess, because that's how I'm classified in government.
By everybody except the KKK, right?
But exactly. But I think the reality is that we need an African-American or black president. I think it will raise our stock in the world tremendously. They will see U.S. has finally grown up. And also, I'm also not afraid of what the right wing is going to do racially, because I think it's an issue we need to get out and blood we need to let. It's time to get past this.
Yep.
And if
Richard,
it's going to cost
very,
something, do it.
Yep, Richard, very well said. I'm sorry we're out of time, but, you know, very well said. It's time to move on beyond race. Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman Program, Evan Moore wants to stop Focus the Nation from holding teach-ins on more than 1,000 college campuses to discuss global warming. I'll be saying, bring it on! And we'll talk about the Republican debate on CNN tonight. Christy Harvey will be here with News Under the Radar and the best of the rest of the news. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.